John McClain with us, brought to you by Horn Solutions. Frank Clark, one of the better defensive players in the NFL, goes from Seattle to Kansas City, signs a big new contract, 5 years, $105.5 million with $63.5 million guaranteed. John, what does the Frank Clark deal do for Jadeveon Clowney's negotiations?
I don't think, just like DeMarcus Lawrence, I don't think it had anything to do with it. I think they know what they want to pay him. He knows what he's asking for, and they haven't reached an agreement. I don't see them signing him. I think he'll play under the franchise tag, and I'm sure that Buzz Cook, every time somebody calls, comes back and wants that contract, and whatever they've got earmarked for him, I'm guessing is closer to Trey Flowers. Clark's been averaging double-digit sacks for 3 years, and we talked about this earlier. Kansas City's taking such a chance with this guy. Seth, you mentioned Tyreek Hill. He hadn't had any issues since he punched his pregnant girlfriend, got kicked out of Oklahoma State. Here he is now involved in the thing, child protective surgeries, taking his son out of his household. That's being investigated by the league. They've held up negotiations on a monstrous new contract for Hill and Frank Clark. It's from 2015. It was just unbelievable what he did to his girlfriend with witnesses and police being interviewed. I just went on the internet. I think I retweeted this yesterday, but the Chiefs have no reservations at all about taking anybody, no matter how bad they were earlier in their football career.
Why do you say that Clark and DeMarcus Lawrence, their deals have nothing to do with Clowney when they seem like very similar players
on
paper?
They would seem like it. Well, Clowney has never been a double-digit sack guy consistently, and they have. And if you want to get the big bucks, you've got to be a double-digit sack guy consistently.
So are you saying, or if I'm hearing you correctly, are you saying that what Lawrence got and what Clark got from a Texan standpoint would be more than what they want to pay Clowney?
I'm guessing Clowney would be more in the Trey Flowers range where you could get only like $90 million. But, I mean, I don't know. I'm not privy to what's going on. I just know whatever they have offered him. And, of course, they've gone up. And, of course, Buzz Cook has come down. But so far they've not been able to meet in the middle, and I don't expect them to. I think it'd be more likely that they get it done next year as they did with DeMarcus Lawrence after he had the franchise tag for one season.
You know, the difference between Frank Clark and Jadeveon Clowney is just Clowney is much more of an impact player behind the line of scrimmage.
He
whether
sure
you want to
is.
Talk run or pass, including like hits on quarter. Because I think that I think teams definitely want pass rush, but they don't look at just sacks. They look at quarterback hits and pressures and all of that. And Clowney's a lot more comparable to a lot of those guys. He's not up there with Aaron Donald or Khalil Mack, but he's a lot more comparable with these other guys who have more total sack numbers in terms of his pass rush ability. So there's that. There's also something that's bothering me, and I'll lump in the way that people are typifying Clowney's relationship with the Texans. Bothers me in the same way that somebody can write an expose of the Patriots or an expose of the Packers and write an article where all they do is point out the negatives and act like that's the broad consensus. You go back to that Patriots article from a couple years ago. If you go around and ask people specifically, like, hey, what bothers you about Tom Brady? Hey, what bothers you about Bob Kraft? Hey, what bothers you about the New England Patriots? You're going to get a lot of answers. You'll get it on the very best team in the league. That doesn't mean that that's somebody's complete and total opinion about a matter. So, like, you can paint the Patriots out as having, like, all kinds of systemic issues 2 years ago. What do? They end up going to a Super Bowl and then winning the next one after that article came out. I think with Clowney, there's little tidbits you hear here and there about how, you know what, the Texans sure would love it if Clowney were a little bit more the conscientious.
Like J.J. Watt.
Exactly.
Or DeAndre Hopkins.
But that doesn't mean that their overall assessment of Clowney is that, nope, we don't want him on this football team. It's like, I don't understand how people have to have it black or white. Like, either he's J.J. Watt or we don't want him on this football team. Life isn't that simple. What relationship do you have in life that's... Mike and I have a great working relationship. There's times where Mike has called me unbearable and we've walked out of the show on each other. But I'd say 95% of our relationship is good, as far as I know.
My relationship with you guys that day was awkward, though. I was like, what am I supposed to do with Papa and Papa too?
If they didn't want Clowney, they wouldn't be trying to sign him.
Right. That's all I'm saying is that just because somebody is not the perfect Eagle scout on and off the field, all I know of Clowney is that on the field, he shows up every single week. He hustles way more. A lot of these big contracts we've talked about, Clowney hustles more than those guys. Like, I don't know. People don't want to hear this for some reason. They get it stuck in their heads that somehow Clowney doesn't hustle. This dude hustles more than 95% of defensive players in the NFL. He busts his ass. Jadeveon Clowney, I'm sorry to break it to you. Jadeveon Clowney is a high motor player. You know, like, and I don't know why that's so hard to comprehend or grasp, but there are a lot of guys out there that make all the meetings and do all the right things and say yes, sir, no, sir, that don't play as hard as Jadeveon Clowney. And I don't think the Texans are so stupid that they're gonna let little trivial things get in the way of seeing that, like, a really good football player could seep out of their hands.
For somebody said he's not the hardest worker, how'd he come back from microfracture surgery and two other operations without working hard?
That's something that I've brought up as well in the past. I mean, I wonder, as we're discussing Clowney and his future with John McClain in with us, brought to you by Horn Solutions, you know, maybe, you know, Clowney's one of these guys where he works, you know, hard enough. And I'm talking, because I've seen every play that Clowney has, you know, performed in a Texans uniform. I have no questions about his effort on the football field. Maybe he's not someone who's in the weight room. And I mean, I haven't played professional football. Seth has. Maybe he's not the same kind of worker that Hopkins or Watt or one of these guys who they've re-signed is. Bernardrick McKinney, somebody like that. And so the Texans aren't thrilled with the idea of making him, like, the franchise guy, the franchise player. But to me, I just look at some of these defensive linemen and pass rushers. Like, they're different breeds.
It's all Charles Haley. Like, yes. There are six Super Bowl championship teams that figured out a way to be like, all right, you know what? Charles Haley isn't quite the ideal guy we want setting the example, but we're going to win a Super Bowl with him.
I want to go back to the Frank Clark trade real quick here. John, the Chiefs are obviously operating with a sense of desperation, urgency, pick whatever word you want to use, with Mahomes on a rookie deal. Do you think that the Kansas City Chiefs called the Texans about Clowney, since they called Seattle, obviously, about Frank Clark?
Or Seattle could have called them about Frank Clark. I mean, I'm sure if you're looking for a defensive end, of course you would call the Texans about Clowney. Other teams have called the Texans about Clowney. And they last year, when they didn't re-sign him before the season, teams called about Clowney, and
yes,
so far they haven't traded him.
And so ultimately, as we are less than 36 hours away, do you see any way Clowney gets traded tomorrow night?
I don't.
Okay. One more. What about Whitney Mercilus?
What if they thought Duke Ejiofor was ready to step up and somebody would give them a third-round pick, something like a 4 and a 3 or something like that, I would think there's a possibility.
Okay.
Because they didn't use Whitney as much as they did in previous years. We asked Romeo Crennel about it numerous times, and he never really said why. He just talked about the way he was being used. That's why his sacks are down. And I know they like Ejiofor, and we're always eager to see what rookies make their biggest improvement going into the second season. Who's that going to be? But Whitney means a lot to this team, but I think if a team made them a good offer, I think, yeah, they seriously consider it.
He only played, you know, 52% of the snaps, maybe 57% of the snaps in the Colts playoff game. They're wasting his talents. Like, they're wasting.
Right now.
Yeah, like, and it's great that he is willing to be used like a jackknife the way they are. But if they wanted to trade him, it'd probably be better off for Whitney and the Texans. And I don't like that. I wish they would just be able to use him more and use him more effectively. And you know, I like having Whitney around. I was hoping he was going to be a guy that was going to be like a career Texan, but I don't know if, like, given the current circumstances, that's going
to
work out.
That's one to watch out for tomorrow. We've got continuing coverage of the first round of the NFL draft starting at 6 a.m. tomorrow on your home of the Texans Sports Radio 610. Time now for Mad Takes. ESPN's Adam Schefter reporting this morning that Marshawn Lynch is not planning to play football again. This would be his second retirement. John McClain, what is your main takeaway from Marshawn Lynch's NFL career?
That one great run he had against, was it New Orleans?
Saints.
The Saints, that is still one of the greatest I've ever seen. That's what stands out. Being at the Super Bowl and having him answer the same, every question the same way. Kind of like next question. And what a weird guy he was. Yeah, he didn't just kneel for the national anthem. He'd go over and sit on an equipment thing. And
nobody really talked about it too much.
And nobody did, because he's Marshawn being Marshawn, and he's such a strange dude. But he also does a lot of great things in his Oakland community, and I think he was really good for the NFL.
I respect the work that he did. I mean, I respect him as a football player as well. But the work that he does in Oakland, you know, the people from that area, since all those teams seem to be leaving except the A's, I feel like is a very interesting story. And how closely he is tied to the community is something that I think is a really nice sports
story.
Played
at Cal, right? Exactly. So
played at Cal.
You begin it there, you start it there. Very cool. The Beast Quake against the New Orleans Saints is still my favorite run in playoff history.
I mean, it is one of the historic runs in the history of the NFL. That would not be going too far.
I've been eager to get John's opinion on this, and I'm glad you're in here. John, we talked about this on the show a couple days ago. Kroger is going to be providing grocery delivery from self-driving cars. I saw this in the Chronicle, so I know it's true. Into a couple specific area codes, zip codes in the Houston area. John, are we now at the point, even though we'll never get flying cars, because like just physics will disallow it. Like we're not gonna have large scale flying cars. Are we now living in the future? Is this the future you imagined when you were a boy and you look at like the cover of Popular Mechanics and be like, oh wow, that's what it's gonna be like in 1993. I feel like grocery delivery and Amazon delivery same day, all this stuff. I feel like I'm living at the level of convenience I thought I was promised when I was 12.
When I was a little, I watched the Jetsons and I wanted to fly.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, will there ever be a time when I'll be in a car that'll fly? And I believe they will, but I won't. It'll be after I'm on the other side of the grass. When I go to the grocery, or which is not often, but when my wife does, she likes to look at different things. If you're going to have a self-driving car, you got to know specifically what you want.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of people, I don't think, who do.
But there's still also, though, just the notion that you could just not even talk to a human being. You could plug, you can punch. Think about this if you were looking at, if you're watching a sci-fi movie in 1970 and you saw some guy pull a little device out of his hands, punch it a few times, and then an hour later, an automated vehicle pulled up to your house and had groceries in it for you. That's futuristic stuff. That's yes. Crazy.
You thought that's never going to happen.
Yeah, then I'm like, oh, this is untenable.
Driving in itself, and you could do like a whole podcast on this part, driving is such an interesting thing in America specifically because you have freedom, you have control, all this kind of stuff. But then when you think about it, like you big picture, it's like, hey, there's going to be this activity, which is going to be a huge for the economy, but in exchange, you're going to lose X amount of people per year dying because of driving, right? Like, would you make this trade? If you think about it from that standpoint, you'd be like, well, would I actually
make
this
you're
trade?
Saying, okay.
Like, how many people
curbing population.
Yeah, like, are you saying if there were no driving right now,
yeah.
Like, would you say, like, hey, here's this thing that we're going to offer? So, like, right, you're saying right now there's no such thing as driving, and you brought it to the population. Yeah. Where like, hey, this is going to be fun. It's going to be awesome. You're going to drive at incredible speeds past each other within mere inches, and a bunch of you are going to die every year. What do you think? It probably wouldn't pass. I don't know.
Like, how many?
Not with today's
something I'm wondering about right now. Like, Paul's in a driverless car. He's in the back seat.
Yep.
He's at a light. He sees this really hot babe next to it. She pulls out. How do you get the driverless car to speed up so you can check her out some more?
That's a good question.
You got to figure this kind of stuff out. Yeah. It's important.
If you compute that into your equation, you bet your ass computer. You best do what I say and follow my heart.
Okay, to bring it back to the, because I got a little confused, Mike.
Yes.
So, but what you're saying is that, like, but obviously driverless vehicles will overall be safer.
Yes.
So they're like people, if you're starting from scratch, you would say, oh yeah, clearly driverless cars are the way to go. It's safer.
I mean, let's
say. You know, even though there will be some mishaps, it's safer overall.
Let's say 200,000 people die on the roads each year. I don't know if that's high or low. Let's say it's around there. It could be higher.
I'm running on a campaign of that. A lot of stupid people out there I need to take care of.
Let's say driverless cars bring that number from 200,000 to, let's say, 1,000.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an amazing trade-off, right? If you can get it to that point. Now, the thing about that is we have to not then overreact to the 1,000 deaths, which I know it's obviously a huge deal for the people involved, but when you think about for society in general, like,
what
that's
are you, Thanos?
I think as long as we,
you know, as long as some ideas out there.
We just got to keep Elon Musk out of the process.
Yeah.
Elon Musk, every time a driverless, every time a Tesla that's not supposed to be auto-driven hurts somebody, his response is like, you all are idiots for freaking out about this. Look, the airbag deployed just fine.
The way you're talking about it, Mike, just totally fine. With giving the wheel over to the robots, you are the kind of person that would be like, you know what, Skynet's a good idea. So when we all die, Mike's fault.
I'm going to convince you guys of two things this morning.
The Robo Revolution, started by Mike Meltzer.
We need driverless cars and Patrick Peterson.
And you convinced me the Texans are a Super Bowl contender with Patrick Peterson.
I don't think I've convinced you of that to any degree right now.
This is a funny story about a habit of a general manager in the National Football League. Rick Spielman is the Vikings general manager. He has drafted a cornerback in the first round in 2013, 2015, and 2018. He also drafted a corner in the second round of 2016. He likes some cornerbacks. He is where the Texans, I think, would like to be at this point in time. When he was asked about his draft strategy, he said on yesterday, "My wife, I'll leave it at home. She said, if you draft another corner, don't come home. You can just stay at the office." Although there's some pretty good corners that we like in the first round. And I'm wondering, off the top of your head, guys, of all of the maybe bad habits or obsessions and fetishes that the Texans maybe have had in their draft history, what is the one that sticks out most to you? A theme, perhaps, that we have seen in draft after draft after draft with the Houston Texans?
This is a great question. All right, so what is the worst habit the Texans have had in the draft? I'm going to give you an answer, and you guys can not like this answer or like it. I don't know. Sometimes they have been a little bit too optimistic when it comes to players' physical attributes. Lewis Nix, Sam Montgomery, Trevardo Williams. Yeah. I know I'm cutting across.
You're going back towards
general
like Rick Smith area, yeah.
With Brian Gain, I don't have enough to really work off of.
I would say my criticism before would have been when they erred on the side of taking a character risk, it was a character risk of like, oh, I don't actually like football all that much. Like, no, please, give me somebody that like beat some dude up in college and has learned the error of his ways but just loves football. They would take guys who are like, oh, I'd rather be LARPing. Because really, frankly, the real world doesn't interest me. Like, yeah, what the hell? No, take a guy with good football character.
I think that for them, the biggest problem, and this was more of a Rick Smith problem, they took a lot of flyers on guys that slipped in the draft. And not many of those guys worked out. Whether it was Xavier Suofilo, who I think a lot of people thought would be an early, towards the top of the first round, Lewis Nix, Sam Montgomery, or a Brennan Williams, they have taken flyers on guys, and it hasn't worked out.
He did a great job taking players in the first round. There was nobody better than with the first rounders. The only time Rick traded up to get a great player was Deshaun Watson. There were other times he could have, but when he stayed where he was, it worked out well. But the second and third round wasn't near as productive as the first, which is not surprising. You know, a lot of general managers tell you, you get your reputation based on after the first three rounds. And they had some Glover Quinns out there and some others, but I don't think there was ever one thing that you thought, oh, my God, why are they taking that position? And Spielman also took Harrison Smith in the first round of safety, and that was a good pick. But
terrific.
He just likes to draft defensive backs in the first round.
John McClain, what should we look forward to as far as the Chronicles coverage of the draft?
My 12th and final, thank God, mock draft will be on Texas Sports Nation Day in the Chronicle tomorrow. Aaron Wilson and I, it seems like we've been doing them for a year, and I have all the top tackles gone, had them taken
Cody Ford.
DeAndre Baker, and I had Ford gone, and then I'm taking a tackle in a corner in the second round. And thank you guys very much. I will see you, talk to you. Well, I'm sure I'll see you this weekend.
Well, we're going to be there at the draft.
We'll be there tomorrow night.
Mike's going to be sober. Paul will probably be blasted. I'll be somewhere.
No, I'm off the booze, bro.
Oh, that's right.
You're going to be off the booze. Right. Don't tempt me.
Keto Paul.
You guys have fun.
Thank you, John. All right.
Bye, John.
It should be a fun next couple of days.
You done doing chats? Did you say you're done doing chats? You're done with the chats?
Chats next week.
Chats next week.
Next week. All right. Again, draft. First round is tomorrow night.
Draft might be a little fun, you know, if I have a couple drinks, though.
No, you know, you're not drinking. You're not drinking.
Mike, Seth, and Paul.
Kind of floated it.
You've been happy. Your eyes have been visible this entire week. Clouded behind baggy eyelids. Yeah.
Oh, damn.
You came in one day a few weeks ago. It's like, holy crap, did you get stung by 1,800 bees?
I did. It wasn't booze.